And welcome back to Coast. Do you believe in the afterlife? Really think about it now. Do you think when you die that you move on, or is that it? In a moment, Sandra Champlain joins us. She's back, and we'll be talking about the other side. And welcome back, George Norrie with you. I shall tell you about our special guest now for the next couple hours. Sandra Champlain is the host of the top afterlife podcast called We Don't Die Radio Show, now on more than 300 hours of interviews. She's the author of the number one international bestseller, We Don't Die, A Skeptic's Discovery of Life After Death and the Healing Audio, How to Survive Grief. Sandra, welcome back to the program.
Hello, George. I'm so grateful to be back.
Do you find that most people believe in the afterlife or not?
I find that they do, but they keep quiet about it because they're worried about what other people think, thinking that other people don't believe. And when I first came out with my book, I work as a day job, work catering for race car teams. I put a big sign up under my tent, is there any proof of the afterlife, and big picture of my book. And so many people came up to me with these hidden stories and thoughts and race car drivers having near-death experiences.
Oh, my God, yeah.
So many things. So it really opened up like a good can of worms because it got people talking about something that has been, I think, taboo to talk about.
Absolutely. Now, tell me, though, I'm curious, what do you do with the race car drivers?
Oh, my mom and I own a catering company, and we travel the United States cooking for race car teams in the IMSA series of racing.
While the races are going on?
Mm-hmm. We feed the pit crews and the drivers and some of the sponsors.
I bet you've been to Indianapolis.
I've been to Indianapolis, Long Beach Grand Prix, Daytona.
Have you been to the St. Louis, Illinois area? They've got a track there.
No,
they've got a nice one out there, too.
And we're currently in Sebring, Florida, working a race. And so,
how'd you get involved in that?
I graduated culinary school as a chef. My mom was a travel agent who did travel for race car teams. Our next-door neighbor was a race car driver. Yeah, and there was this 24-hour race in Daytona that happens every year. And one of the team owners said it'd be nice to have a chef cook for the guys as opposed for them getting burgers.
What do you bring in terms of equipment? Are you in a big truck, or what are you in?
We have a big truck that transports our materials and ovens and things, but we have a tent set up by a local tent company that we roll everything out, and so we make like a mobile kitchen, and then also we rent a huge tent that we set up tables and chairs and carpeting and do buffet meals. So the race that we're at right now, our biggest number will be 1,200 people per meal.
That's huge.
It's huge.
What do you cook?
I'm
turning this into a cooking hour here.
You know what? We can turn this into a life after death hour too, because it all ties in together. Because I enjoy taking care of people, so it doesn't matter if feeding them or talking about afterlife. It's nurturing the soul, but feed them buffets of mostly meat and potato kinds of things, pasta. Tonight we did a Mexican dinner for the guys. The crew guys have been working already.
Now, how did you get involved in dealing with the afterlife? How did that happen?
Well, it all stemmed from somewhere in the mid-90s that I looked up at the stars at night and I started questioning what else is out there. And for some reason, it just really started brewing internally as a fear of dying. I grew up Catholic and went to church every Sunday.
Just like I did, same thing.
Yeah, not knocking religion, but it didn't provide, just the faith did not provide me with a knowing. And so the fear was always there when I'd go to bed at night, when I'd wake up in the morning, just not knowing what happens. And so I just very secretly started studying. But why my book is called A Skeptic's Discovery.
Are you the skeptic?
Yeah, because I used to, you know, it's even like cynical because I would make fun of people that believed in it. I would make fun of people that were, you know, going to Barnes & Noble or Borders Bookstore in the spiritual section. And, you know, I'd see these people looking up things like angel cards and psychic things. And I thought, oh, these poor people, you know, there's no proof. You have to see it, smell it, taste it, feel it, hear it, to know it's real. And I think I got that just, my dad was an airline pilot and he was very factual based, and I'm really not sure where I adopted that, but I never knew that we human beings have egos that think we're always right, and I didn't realize that somehow I just bought into this theory that, you know, we had to see it to believe it. But my fear of dying was so strong that very secretly I just started looking for evidence.
I find that the older you get and the more you understand the dying process, it becomes a little more acceptable and not as scary as it used to be.
So I haven't been that far along. I'm 52 now, but I spoke at a nursing home, and I was talking about my book, and it was a packed house. There must have been 30 people. And had to have the microphone turned way up for hearing in a very small room. But I found that those people sitting there, the closer they were, the more questions they had. And there was a lot of fear. So it really warmed my heart to be able to share what I have discovered.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I think it's very normal for people to question our mortality. And my grandmother, she would always say, when God calls me forth, I can't come fifth. You know, I loved little Grammy. And so she didn't have a fear of dying. She lived a good life. She watched so many of her friends pass away, and she was ready to join them. You know, her husband had died, my grandfather. So I guess it depends on the individual.
Well, tell me, though, how did you become skeptical?
Yeah, I think it was something I was born into, and I think probably younger days having some heartache, heartbreak, things I believed in didn't pan out. And I just, like I said earlier, that I grew up with a mindset of being right, and this is the way it is. And like I said, whether I adopted it from my parents or from upbringing, healthy skepticism is being open to different possibilities.
Nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that. But at that point, I was not even open. And like I said, that fear just kind of creeped open the door that had me start being open.
What convinced you, Sandra, that the afterlife is the real deal?
The very first thing that happened is I took a course in mediumship. There was a woman who said, I can prove to you life after death is real. In 3 days, I can make you a medium. And that was so in my face that there's no way anybody can do that. But my fear of dying was still there, and I said, I've got to take this course.
But were you skeptical at that, too?
I was, but I went.
Yeah.
So there I was sitting with about 20 people, and I felt totally out of place, a lot of people wearing their angel gowns and things.
Mm-hmm.
And so this woman said, we're not going to do medium readings now, but this is how it's done. Everyone take a partner. Okay. So I sat in front of this woman I'd never seen before. She says, I want you to imagine that there's this nice bubble of energy around you. She said, the people that are in the afterlife, they're still themselves. So be respectful, introduce yourself. And she says, create a love. Just feel the feeling of love for your partner, even if you haven't met them yet. She says, we're just practicing now. We're not really doing it. So it took all the pressure off. And she says, close your eyes and make up that there's a person standing behind your partner. So I went first. I figure I'm a chef, very creative. And to this woman, with my eyes closed, I said, oh, okay, I'm seeing a man behind you. I'm feeling it's your grandfather on your mother's side. He was a fisherman. I saw like a flash of a fishing boat. He was a smoker. I saw, smoking away. He died of lung cancer. And I'm just letting the story unrolled out of my mouth.
Yeah.
His name was Jan. He had blue eyes and a big gap between his front teeth. And he never said to your mother, I love you. And he feels bad about that, and can you deliver the message? So, George, I open my eyes. The woman sitting across from me is crying. Her grandfather's name was Jan. He was a fisherman in Denmark, died of lung cancer, and she had heard stories of her grandfather never saying, I love you. And that came out of me, Sandra Champlain. That opened the door that something more
is out there.
Is out there, yeah.
And you've never looked back.
Never. Never, never, never.
I want to go through your top 10 countdown.
Okay, that's fun.
And we'll go through that. I'll give you the title, and you tell us a little bit about each
okay.
one. In your last hour, by the way, next hour we'll take phone calls.
Okay.
And they're already calling, by the way, just to line up here.
Hello to your listeners. Hello, Coast to Coast.
For number one, evidential mediums. Tell us about that.
Yes, evidential mediums are people like Mark Anthony, the psychic lawyer, the Long Island.
Good guy. I like him.
He's fantastic. People that you're sitting in front of or on the phone, and they can tap in to your loved one's energy, and they can give you evidence by saying, I got your mother, and give some details and things that only you will know. So that provides evidence. And there's even some mediums that I know that are so specific, they don't want you to say anything except for yes or no. And they will be so detailed on evidence. So throughout my last, 300 hours of interviews, I've really worked with some top-notch people. And let me just slide this in. For people, I know a lot of evidential mediums can be expensive, but there are some great resources. And one is, do you mind if I give a website?
No, not at all.
It's a nonprofit, snui.org, and it's the Spiritualist National Union International. That is run by the Arthur Findlay College, which teaches mediumship in the UK. But for something like $30 a year, people can belong to this site, and several times a month they do online spiritualist services. Spiritualism is a religion and really great, but at the end of every service, they do medium readings. And so online, they do medium readings in these chat rooms, and so there's very high probabilities that your loved ones come through.
Next one, deathbed visitations.
Wow. Just before many people pass, they can look up and either hear or see their loved ones or angels talking with them.
Now, how do we know it's not their mind or their brain doing something while they're getting close to dying?
Yeah, well, that's always possible, so there's not any 100% guarantee on anything, but there are so many stories, like Thomas Edison, before he died, he would only say things that are factual, and just before he died, his last words, he was whispered to his doctor with his eyes wide open, "It's so beautiful there," and one of the ladies that I know, she studies this. Martha Atkins is her name. And she was in the hospice room of a young boy. And just before he passed, he was looking in the corner and he was talking to the corner. And the parents said, "You know, who are you talking to?" And I don't remember the children's names, but say it was Gary, Steve, and Bobby. And then he passed. Well, the last three children who died in that room were Bobby, and, you know, the three names. So people can see, and to me, I feel that's very comforting, that it's and like you say, you know, could it be our imagination? It could, but there's so many stories of people that share, oh, you know, my dad is here visiting, and, okay, he's taking me, they want me to go now, things like that.
Next one, induced after-death communication and grief reattachment therapy.
Very interesting. Dr. Alan Botkin is one of the fine folks that does this. He was a doctor in the VA hospital, and there's something called EMDR, which is an eye movement desensitization process they've done with veterans who have had post-traumatic stress disorder. And he found accidentally, because he did not believe in the afterlife, that when he gave a little too much left, right, like if my finger is moving in front of your eyes and you're recalling a memory of something very painful or something that happened in the war, to detach the memory with the emotion, they do this process. I'm not doing it justice how I'm explaining it, but the story goes that he gave a little too much of this left, right eye movement, and the client was like transported into his mental zone where not only could that person see their deceased loved ones, but could also see Dr. Botkin's deceased loved ones. And so
that's intriguing.
Yeah. And so Dr. Bodkin's like, God, I don't even believe in this. This is, you know, how, but how could he know this? So he did on the next few people the same kind of thing just to see what would happen. And as it turned out, it was well over 90% of people when he administered this could go into that zone and tap into it. And he now calls it IADC, induced after-death communication, that you can look up online. And then Rochelle Wright does something very, very similar, all about helping the grieving. So everything, even the common denominator and the foundation of everything I do, and I would not be sharing this so much if it didn't alleviate the deep pain that we feel from grief.
Reincarnation, of course, we all know what that is, but let's get your take.
Well, yeah, there's like big controversy on reincarnation. There are so many people who have studied, like Dr. Ian Stevenson and others, past lives of children, like children that would say who they were and things like that. And then there's the flip side. There's people that say, oh, well, reincarnation is not real. What it is, it's a deceased loved one that is very, very close to the person. And they're like the child would be a medium. So I'm of the personal belief in reincarnation because I think personally that we're souls having this human experience to learn. And why would we just come once? You know, if
exactly.
It's this rich place to get all this education for the soul and learn emotions. And
something we've handled on the show a lot, Sandra, electronic voice phenomena. I find this to be fascinating.
I love it. Now,
they're not always really clear.
No.
I mean, sometimes you hear things like, and you know
right.
what? And then when you play it on the radio, it's even harder to hear. But there's something there.
My first experience was with Tom and Lisa Butler, who, well, they it's now called the ATRANC, but it used to be called the American Association for electronic voice phenomena. And we would record white noise, so it would be any kind of background noise, really. And then we would play it back and upload it into the computer and play it back and listen in for words. And same kind of thing. I had already taken the mediumship course, so I knew there was something real, but I still wasn't quite buying into it. And I was at a cabin in a place called the Omega Center in New York, Rhinebeck, New York. I had my digital tape recorder. It was raining outside. And I just said to, I'm imagining my grandparents and my aunt and uncle there. And I said, if you guys are real and I'm supposed to help people believe in the afterlife, I said, I need you to try to talk loud into this thing, holding the recorder.
Yeah.
I said, I'm going to let it record 1 minute and then I'm going to say goodnight. When I played it back, didn't even have to put it into my computer, it said, and it gave me chills, good night, Sandra. And then, good night, good night, good night, a man's voice.
Good night.
Yeah. And then since then, I've heard of the great Sonia Rinaldi, who has been in Brazil working with parents free of charge, recording the gibberish, you know, the chopped up recording of
right.
voices. Yeah, and working with a parent and saying, talk as if your child is here. And then when it gets played back, very clearly are the children's voices.
Let's talk more about all this, Sandra, when we come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And of course, in our final hour, we will take phone calls. And welcome back to Coast, Sandra Champlain with us. Of course, her websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Sandra will take calls next hour with you. So we know what near-death experiences are, but what are shared death experiences?
Very interesting. Dr. Raymond Moody recently wrote a book on this. It's when someone passes away, the person with them actually sees what they're going through. They see the light. They might hear the
wow.
sound. They might see the loved ones come to greet them. And there is a gentleman by the name of William Peters who actually has had a near-death experience who's created something called Shared Crossings, who actually teaches people how to, well, what these things are and how we can get into that state. So if we are at the bedside of someone that we love, close to their time, that we can be part of it. And what I find this is useful for is it takes away our fear of dying when we can actually know that these are some of the things that are common that happen in the dying process. It takes away the fear.
Next up, spirit artists.
Well, this is a
what
medium.
Are they?
That is a medium, an evidential medium, that also has the gift of being an artist. For instance, after my dad died, even though I did believe in the afterlife, I was grieving something terribly. And there was a woman in Massachusetts, and there are some other folks in the world. And I saw her. She pulls out her sketch pad, and as she's giving me such specific information about conversations that I had with my dad that nobody else knew, her hand was busy moving on her note paper there, and she drew a picture of what my dad looked like when he was in the Air Force when he was maybe 26, 28 years old. And I said, well, Dad passed, being 74, with the tubes in him in the hospital. And she says, we get to be our best age when we transition. And so it is great, obviously, to hear the evidence coming from somebody's mouth about our loved one, but it's a whole nother realm when somebody draws a picture of our loved one.
Sure is.
Or our animals. Our animals are right there, too. When we die, when we take that last breath, I do believe 100%, George, we close our eyes here, we open them, and it's like crossing the finish line. Our loved ones are there who have gone before. Our animals are there. Anybody we've loved.
Trance mediumships. Isn't that what Whoopi Goldberg was in the movie Ghost?
Yes. And I think that's pretty fascinating. There are trance mediums that can channel people that have lived on Earth and give philosophy. And that's great. But for me, I want more evidence of the afterlife. I've taken a course in this trance mediumship at the Arthur Findlay College twice. And it is quieting our mind and asking the spirit friends to join close. And if I could be a voice for your father, say, and it takes a while to get into that relaxed state, but then be really willing to say whatever words want to come out of my mouth. And the tutor demonstrated several times and had us practice this as well, just like Patrick Swayze stepping into Whoopi Goldberg, being able to talk to your person again. And I think one of the things I'm passionate about is letting evidential mediums know that this kind of thing is possible so that they might learn trance mediumship to do that. But I saw a man crying because his father, through the tutor, was talking directly to him with such specific information.
Oh, it's got to be emotional.
Oh, everybody in the room was in tears. And again, these are small groups. These are not any real big expensive courses. It's not about the money. It's about service. And that tells me that things have integrity.
And physical mediumship. What's the difference between that and trance mediumship?
Well, physical mediumship has always been something I've been afraid to talk about because there's two words that are hard to come out of my mouth. One is the word seance, and the other word is the word ectoplasm.
Aha.
And I thought, now, come on. The premise is a circle of people sit in the dark. So skeptical mind says, why does it have to happen in the dark? And there are very few of these physical mediums out practicing in the world right now because it is, I don't know, controversial, whatever. But the medium is actually strapped down to a chair to prove they are not getting up and manipulating things. And this ectoplasmic substance, which is like a vapor, will come out of them. And our deceased loved ones, their etheric body, can actually step into it and become real again. And this is just like me taking that course on mediumship. I had to experience it to believe it. And I know there's, even in my own mind saying this, it's something you have to experience to know the reality of it, to be able to explain it is difficult. But I have heard loved ones talking to their people in these rooms. I've felt the touch of human hands that were not like a little child's hands, and there were no children in the room. Something that made me say, you know what, I can share this, is Dan Aykroyd, who wrote Ghostbusters.
Yes.
You know, the green slimy stuff is ectoplasm. Well, didn't I do some research, that he comes from a line of spiritualists, and his great-grandfather and grandfather held these seances. And when old granddad died, his dad opened up the chest, and there were all these journals of all the seances they've had and all the people that came back and actually spoke again. So I find it really fascinating. It's really great. But again, you know, using the word seance and ectoplasm, hard to say, but to actually sit in the seance room and to witness reconnections people have with their loved ones is like nothing I've ever experienced.
You had mentioned Brazilian scientist Sonia Rinaldi, and is she working with some kind of videos and things like that, capturing the deceased?
She sure is. And I'd
what's happening
make a recommendation. You interview her sometime. So the last 3 years or so, she has been working with a camera, either like a regular camera or video camera. And say, for instance, she would film a computer screen turned off or a television screen turned off. And now she'd be working with a parent or someone who's lost their loved one. Again, free, never charged a penny for this. And then when the video gets played back, the faces show up of their children or their loved one or their animal. She believes she's working with Nikola Tesla and other scientists that are in the unseen world, because not only have their voices and their names come through with electronic voice phenomena, but their pictures have shown up as well. And I do have a way that your listeners can actually see some of these pictures that I can share. But to see her presentation and to see the children who maybe they had committed suicide or died of an illness, and to see, they're a little bit fuzzy, but they're clear enough that you know that they are those children. One kid died when he was a toddler, and he showed a whole series of pictures of himself showing that he's actually growing up in the afterlife. Another kid always liked to pretend that he had a fake mustache on, and when he came through in his picture, didn't he have a fake mustache on? One guy didn't like to be bald, and when his picture came up, well, he's got hair in the afterlife, proving that we can be who we want to be. But those pictures of hers are my top number one reason that you can't look at that and not get goosebumps and say, there is something to this.
Sandra, why do you think the afterlife was formed?
What do you mean by that?
Well, why is it there in the first place?
I think this is one of those big questions that I don't know if our brains can get around, but I think that there is a place, and I personally call it heaven, that it's good all the time. It's all those things we want it to be. And that's where we are before coming to Earth, and that's home that we return to after. So there's a great quote that our life is but a thread of the fabric of our soul. So there's a much bigger picture. So we choose, and this empowers me, we choose to come into this place called Earth, where there's things called emotions, and there are other people in there, and we get something called our ego that has us forget who we really are. So we play this game called life, where we get a huge amount of growth and education for our soul that we can't get anywhere else. We want to learn to be courageous. We don't get courage. We get fear, and we get opportunities to move through it. And I think for myself and for other people who are grieving the loss of a loved one, as painful as grief is, I think it offers an opportunity for us to start looking at our own mortality, our own spirituality. There's some kind of pine cone that I know can only grow after it's subjected to a really intense forest fire. And I think the pain that we feel when we grieve has the opportunity to help us go on our path of what it is to be human and find our own spirituality.
There are many, many ways to try to communicate with the other side. Many people have tried. Some people think they've succeeded. Do you think as technology gets better and better and better that we're going to be able to communicate with the dead?
Absolutely, I do. I remember in my lifetime the first cell phone that came out, big clunky thing. And now look what we have. I remember 25 years ago going to Walt Disney World and the Carousel of Progress, and someday there'll be a computer in every home. And look what we have now. And then even the FaceTime technology that we're seeing somebody.
Oh, that's crazy, yeah.
It is crazy. But my mind 25 years ago would say that is impossible, could never happen. And we humans, and this is just part of being human, things that are very big deals become no big deals. I mean, we don't look at our cell phone and go, wow, that's miraculous. There are people like Dr. Gary Schwartz, who I know you know.
Oh, great guy.
All kinds of scientific investigations, having people in the afterlife work with some of his machinery to sense and pick up different movements and whatever they are, different, sensing the different things. And even with Sonia, she is now working, well, how can she train others to do what she does? Because it's not complex. But, I've become friends with Sonia Rinaldi recently. And
you're going to be at an event with her the end of March, aren't you?
End of March. I'm hosting an event called We Don't Die Orlando, which is going to be in Holiday Inn Resort, just a couple miles from Disney. Sonia Rinaldi will be there doing her presentation. An EVP expert, Sherry Pearl, will be there teaching.
Our buddy Mark Anthony?
Our buddy Mark Anthony is the keynote speaker. And he's actually, he delivers a great keynote, but he's also going to be talking about the Bible. Because a lot of people have this fear that if they're talking to the dead, that they're doing something against their religion. And Mark Anthony says no, and he talks about the evidence of the afterlife in the Bible and people doing that. That William Peters, who I was talking about, mm-hmm. the shared crossings, he's going to be there. I've got a great couple from Scotland who are so evidential with their mediumship. They're the ones who will only let you say yes or no, but they'll say something like, I've got your grandmother here. She's saying she was a plumber. She's got a rose tattoo, and in 2019, there certainly could be a grandmother like that, but with such specifics. Scott Milligan, that physical medium, he will be there. And I also have Chris Fitting, and who is a spirit illustrator. So as his partner on stage, Jennifer Brazier, is going to be doing an evidential mediumship demonstration, he's going to be there with the overhead projector drawing the picture, and most of the time it's the same person she's talking about.
How do people find this event, those who want to be
simply
in Orlando?
WeDon'tDieOrlando.com.
WeDon'tDieOrlando.com.
And here's, for those, I understand people who can't make it, but if you scroll down to my description of Sonia Rinaldi, on that page, it's got her website, but just beneath that, she just published her latest findings that have plenty of pictures.
We've got some of them linked up for you, too, on our tweet.
Yeah, plenty of pictures and plenty of EVPs.
She does remarkable work.
Yeah, it's amazing. And that's just a little tiny bit of what she does. And now she wants to work with holograms. And now these scientists are actually giving her the instructions of what she needs. And this is so sweet. I did my very first event, We Don't Die Boston, a few weeks ago, and we asked her, what's the next thing you want to do? And she wanted four small screen projectors to try to create a light source in the middle of it all and then film it. But she says, oh, they're too expensive. So Scott Milligan, the physical medium, went out to Best Buy, and they were something like $129 a piece. And we presented her with those four projectors for the next stage of her work.
What fascinates you the most about near-death studies?
Oh, well, I think it's tying it in with living a powerful life. There's something that I learned that happens in like 90% of the near-death experiences. We have this thing called a life review. And we've all heard about the
life. Is it our Akashic records?
Yes. But to look, I don't believe there's someone saying, you were good, heaven for you, you were bad, hell for you. I don't believe in hell.
Pointing, there you go, up you go, down you go.
I think here is the tough part. Living life is the tough part. But we actually will have a review of our life from the other person's perspective. So when I go, I will actually experience this show from your perspective and how it made you feel. So the good news is you get to see the difference you've made in so many lives, and this is for you, and the ripple effect, because you never know who listens to the show, George, and may not, you know, I know there's people that have listened to my show who have not committed suicide, and I figure there are with you as well, because we give and we help people with their life.
Right. We have had calls of people who are on the edge. Who,
I believe it.
You know, who are contemplating it, and hopefully I think we talk them out of it.
Yeah. You know what? My last event, there was a gentleman that walked past, and he sees the big banner, We Don't Die, and he says, what is this? I'm staying at this hotel. And I said, oh, would you like to come in? I said, do you know what evidential mediums are? He says, no, I don't. So I told him, and I gave it to him. Why not? You know,
good. Sure.
He was deep looking and dressed nice and came in, and he says, wow. And I said, well, you're welcome back tomorrow. I just had that feeling. And so the next morning I did a talk about grief, because grief is the thing, I think, that has most people looking for evidence that their loved ones are around. So we sat in on that. Well, I ended up giving him the whole weekend. And at the end, he took us aside, and he said his wife had left him with he's not been able to see his own children. And then he lost his job, and he's living at that hotel.
He was thinking of ending it, wasn't he?
He was. And because of just the time he spent with us, he says, you gave me my life.
You saved him. We're going to come back and take calls next on Coast to Coast AM.